Welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. Good evening, everybody. Welcome once again to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. I'm Willie Hassel, along with the lovely, the mystical, the mysterious, Lynn Nickerson. How are you tonight?
Hey, Willie. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
That's a tall tale.
That is a tall tale, but hey, you know, it's the only one I got.
Mm.
And I do want to mention now, we'll bring it up again at the end of the show, but after tonight, we are going to be missing in action for 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
I'm going in to have a hip rebuild, and so...
You're going to be incapacitated.
I'm always incapacitated, but I'm not going to be able to walk either.
Well, you're not going to be able to walk to the studio, that's for sure.
That's right, and, they won't, and the doctor won't let me drive.
He won't let you drive, neither.
So we will bring that up at the end of the show, but right now we got a great guest tonight, and we don't want to keep him waiting forever. So tonight on Spirit Radio, the Paranormal Experience, we welcome to the show Eric Benson. Eric lives in Denver, Colorado, and makes his living in the information technology field. But in his other life, he has had paranormal encounters since he was a young boy growing up in Connecticut. In later years, he had such a thirst to find out what was really going on in the supernatural world, he took up investigating in a serious way. So now with some 200 investigations under his belt, he is currently part of the Denver-based American Association of Paranormal Investigators. Rick is also the author of Supposedly Haunted, True Life Experiences of a Paranormal Investigator, and his second book of Ghostly Origins, More True Life Experiences of a Paranormal Investigator. So let's welcome to Spirit Radio tonight, Eric Benson. Welcome, Eric.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
So, just how cold is it there in Denver?
Well, I'm sitting in the back readout. It's 37 degrees.
Okay, I'd take that.
Yeah, it's a lot warmer than it is here.
It's about 25 here right now, and the wind is blowing. There's snow blowing all over the place. It's quite chilly. It's supposed to get down to, what, 5, you said, Willie?
Oh, something like that tonight.
Yeah.
3 degrees.
3, tonight, okay. Yeah. So it's like approaching Arctic temperatures here.
Yeah.
Well, Eric, your book is really a joy. It was very interesting. It was nice, getting a take on, you know, your version of the paranormal. And I think that between you, me, and Willie, our thoughts kind of parallel, you know?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very nicely done. It's well written, well organized. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, too. It was a very good book, Eric.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You know, when I wrote that, I didn't kind of wrote it for myself. First of all, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to document some experiences, and I wrote it for my friends and family, and I figured, nobody's going to buy this, nobody will read this, but except for my friends and family, of course. So,
And us. We bought it.
With no expectations at all. And you know, the response to it has been really good, actually. It's resonated with a lot of people. And that's really cool.
It's
humbling for me. I just didn't expect that type of response.
Oh, now, that's good. That's great.
Did you self-publish, Eric?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I really had no idea what I was doing. But I had a, you know, computer science background, and in this age of self-publishing, there are ways, you know, means to an end. So I did the research and figured out how to format the document and, you know, all the things that you never think of.
Oh, there's a lot to
for
it.
A book, you know.
Did you happen to use Create Space?
Things like getting the page numbers and the titles to alternate on pages. You know, I mean, things you don't even consider.
Yeah. There's a lot to the formatting and embedded fonts and then getting the right resolution on the book cover to make sure that the printer will accept it. It's a real learning curve.
yeah, definitely.
Who did you go through? Was it Create Space?
It was, yeah. That's now been converted to Altic.
I know.
Kindle now. But, yeah, it was Create Space when I put that book out.
Mm, good job. Well, there were a couple of things that kind of piqued my interest, and one of them was you mentioned, we'll kind of go in sequence of what's in your book, but you mentioned group investigations and working with other people, and sometimes it gets pretty tedious, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's... almost everybody that I've met in the field that has been in the field for any period of time, most of those folks have gone through, I would say, a revolving door of groups over the years.
Yeah.
It really is just, it's like anything, right? Whether it's paranormal investigation or whatever, you know, I mean, you get people together and they don't always play nicely together.
Yeah, there are egos and then there's different methodology.
Yeah, very divisive field, unfortunately, in a lot of ways.
So, we like keeping it down to just a few people, three, four, something like that, depending on the size of the location. But sometimes you just don't need more than three, usually.
Yeah.
And you're in with a pretty good group right now, aren't you, the American Association?
Yeah, you know, we're small. The group itself has been around for many years, the early 2000s or something like that. I think 2002, or I guess I have to go look at our own website. But it's been around for a while, and it's gone through its share of iterations. You know, we've had as many as 100-plus members to as few as just two or three. And it's kind of gone through the same gyrations as I was talking about. You know, it's spent a fair amount of time being very rigid. I always hesitate to say science-based because really none of us are scientists, so we're not actually trained in the scientific method. So I don't want to sell it as more than it is, but they were very rigid, you know, taking copious notes during investigations and logging people, you know, leaving and coming into the location, and just very rigid and very methodical. And over the years, that just has kind of turned into what it is now. It's pretty loose. We're a small group of really good friends. We trust each other. We've been on many investigations together, and we go out and have fun at this point. We try to have experiences become about.
There was one thing I noticed in your book. Foremost, you got to have fun. You got to enjoy it. If you're not enjoying it, then why do it?
Well,
the majority of us have jobs, right? Like I'm busy all day. I was at work all day. So if I'm going to spend my free time doing something in terms of a hobby, it had best be fun as far as I'm concerned.
True.
Otherwise, I'd rather be watching TV or something.
Okay, so what about the great orb debate? I had to bring up. Oh, no. Okay, so you did mention that, you know, a lot of the orbs could be dust. Granted, they could be. You also mentioned that some seem to have their own light source or be their own light source, or some of them even flash. So is it your opinion that probably just those are the two types of orbs that are acceptable as being spirit energy? How do you qualify the orbs?
They had to go into the orb thing.
I know.
I got to bring that up.
I couldn't help myself.
Yeah. Now, I am with the segment of the paranormal population that generally believes that 99.9% of the orb photographs that you see are dust, water vapor, mainly because you can reproduce those most of the time at will.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, you can go into your, you can go up to your couch and turn off all the lights and slap it with your hand and then start taking flash pictures and you'll get all these great orb pictures, you know, mm-hmm. that are very similar to the ones that have been put out. Yeah,
with faces in them and everything.
Energy. Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, they have texture and grain to them. And yeah, it's very easy to reproduce those. So I like to, it's difficult to see pictures like that. Now, there is a picture, I don't know if it's on our website anymore. It certainly can be after this. I'll look around for it and see if I can find it, because now I'm going to tell people about it and they're going to be like, where the heck is this picture? So the founder of our group many years ago was in one of the local cemeteries here in Colorado. I think it was up north. It was like Lafayette Cemetery or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a flash picture with an old 35-millimeter camera. And in the picture, there's a very large, what looks like about a 6-inch in diameter bubble. Hmm. It literally looks like a bubble that someone blew with dish soap. But it's big and it's kind of green. Yeah, it's transparent. Like, it's really funky. It's a very funky picture. And so things like that will happen, and we'll come across those. And it's like, all right, well, I've never seen that. I've never been walking around and just had a bubble fly past me. You know, I mean, stuff doesn't happen.
It's worth consideration.
So, yeah, but I think the main thing, and I might have pointed this out in the book. It's now been 2 years since I wrote that, but we have actually seen on multiple occasions, and even very recently, within the past couple of months, what I would call points of light zipping around a dark room.
I've heard of that recently. That's interesting.
Yeah, we've seen this a lot, actually, over
really?
The years. And they can be different colors, like white or red or blue.
Yeah.
Most of the time, more than one person sees this, and it just kind of, you know, it's just very tiny. Like, I would say
like
maybe
sparkles?
The size of a pea, but probably smaller. And we've seen these specifically in locations that are known to be very haunted, in our opinion. Like the Farrar School was the most recent one, and
yeah.
seen them at the old Tooele Hospital in Utah. So when we see things like that with our eyes, and we have multiple witnesses, it's plausible that you could catch that on camera, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I'm probably not answering your question. I think most of the
most of the
pictures are dust, but we have seen some things that lead me to believe that there is legitimate phenomenon that is orb-like. Put it that way.
Orb-like, yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Now, I can give you guys a good one. Here's a good orb story, right?
Okay.
And this is in the second book, which you guys probably haven't gotten to. So
I started it, but I haven't finished it.
Yeah, the second book is just an extension of the middle of the first one. You know, I had more ghost stories to tell. So there's a cemetery in Colorado called the Silver Cliff Cemetery, and it's south of Denver by about an hour and a half.
Okay, I think this is the story I was just thinking of.
Yeah, there are reports for many years going back to the 1800s of people seeing blue balls of light flying around this cemetery. Mm. So, and it was in National Geographic, and it's kind of one of those urban legends. You can Google it. It's easy to find. Colorado Silver Cliff Cemetery, blue ball of light, whatever. And you'll find a lot of information about that place. So it was maybe 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago, we were wanting to get the group together, and it's like, hey, you know, let's just drive down to Silver Cliff. We'll just hang out. We're going to have a good time anyway. We're going to laugh, and we'll go out. We'll go have some dinner, and everybody will have a good time. So we went down there, and it was just after dark, and I was driving I had a big pickup truck at the time, and there were four of us in the truck, and we pulled into the cemetery, and literally within, I don't know, it was like within the first minute, I had my driver's side window down, and I turn and look, and there is a blue ball of light somewhere around the size of a baseball or a softball.
Jeez.
Just sitting right above the ground, and it was very blue, and it was absolutely pitch black in the cemetery, but this thing was lighting up the ground. It was kind of white underneath it.
That's odd.
And it was 6 feet outside the window, right? So So I'm staring at it, and our group founder, Stephen, was behind me on the driver's side. He was fortunate to see it, too, because he happened to be on the same side of the vehicle. And I honestly thought that it was a something you buy at, like, Home Depot, like one of those.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally, you go into cemeteries, and people leave trinkets and mementos and solar-powered lights and all that kind of stuff. And it was so bright that I just assumed it was a light bulb or something. And as we approach it, it just fades away. It disappears. So, of course, we stop the truck and get out, and we get the flashlights out, and there is nothing. Nothing on the ground, just dirt and some grass, and just absolutely no reason for that to be there. So so for me, that was like the mothership of orb sightings. If I'm never going to see an orb, that was the one. But to travel down there to a place where that was the reported phenomenon, and within the first couple of minutes actually seeing it, was really actually pretty cool.
What town is that in, Eric?
What town? The town is called Silver Cliff.
Silver Cliff is the town. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, those are really strange characteristics. And it was just hovering, too, right? Near the ground?
Yeah, it was motionless. And as we approached it, it just kind of gently faded out. It just faded to black.
Wow.
And so I just thought it was some kind of trinket that someone left that maybe pulses or flashes or whatever, but of course we wanted to check it out, so we got out of the truck, and it's, you know, sure enough, there was absolutely nothing there. It was just a grave. It was hovering right over a grave, and it was just nothing there.
It's almost like it's the ghost equivalent of the full body apparition, and then all of a sudden there's nothing, you know, fades from view.
Well, that's how it always is, right?
Yeah,
blink and it's gone.
Gone without a trace.
Yeah.
Oh, Willie, were you going to say something?
No.
Okay. Well, I wanted to mention really quickly that Willie and I do a lot of investigating. There's one particular museum that's about 300 years old, and upstairs in the attic, it's very, very dusty. And we will sit there, and we will take photos upon photos and get absolutely no orbs. And then all of a sudden, 60 will appear, and then the next shot, there's nothing. And they do have the different characteristics of colors, different colors. Some have faces in them, and some of them are their own light sources, and some are just zipping around like crazy. And then the next shot, there will be nothing. Or it may take two more shots for everything to disappear. But it's like they appear, and then they disappear. And the photographer isn't doing anything different. So it does make you question, what are those things?
Yeah, it does make you wonder.
Yeah. I guess it's not all dust.
Oh, yeah, no, it certainly is not all dust. I just think most of them are dust. But there's something going on, for sure.
Yeah. There's another friend of mine that is really into fairies, and she is saying that those little points of light could very well be fairy creatures. You know, who knows?
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, because I've heard it referred to as fairy dust before.
Yeah.
Phenomenon.
But those blue
ones. I don't know, I mean, I've seen some absolutely ridiculous things that should not be possible, so
yeah.
I can't take anyone's theory and say, well, that sounds crazy. You know, it's that whole thing. It's like, where do you draw the line? Like,
right.
I believe in ghosts, but Bigfoot is fake, or I believe in a UFO, but not in ghosts. I mean, I don't know. I just try to stay very open at this point.
Yeah. So cemeteries, you don't do you shy away from them now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would say at this point we borderline would never investigate a cemetery. Not just randomly, right? Silver Cliff was a bit of its own, had
yeah.
its own legend behind it, so there was something to see there. But, yeah, we've had some weird stuff happen in cemeteries, and I think it's because, at least the ones around here that I'm thinking of, I think folks go up there and do weird stuff. I mean, we found evidence of it, right? We found half-burnt candles and what looked like ritual sites. And
yeah.
I think there's people going into those places on occasion and doing things that they might not know how to close back down.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
we generally avoid it. It's not, we don't bother. Cemetery investigation.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. I mean, I do believe that cemeteries are haunted, but there's also that other sort of dark element that you have to be leery of, so.
Yeah.
But it is fun during the day to go investigating these old cemeteries.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's so much history there.
But, oh, sure. sure.
Of course, like any other place with a cemetery, it's not the dead you need to worry about, it's the living.
Hmm.
You never know what's going to be in there.
I've never heard that, Willie.
You never heard that?
Well, no, I'm kidding.
You got to get out more.
So how many haunted gas station bathrooms have you been in, Eric?
we've had this long-running theory in the group, and I think we've probably proved it over time. I think you could go just about anywhere and get evidence of the paranormal. I think
yeah.
you could do enough EVP sessions and enough recordings that you will get stuff no matter where you are. I don't know that it necessarily matters. I think the intention, if the intention is there, I think it's very likely that you can call things
sure.
to reply to you.
Yep.
And we've done that in random places, and we've gotten, you know, we've gotten EVPs sitting in a car, like in a parking lot, like just ridiculous, you know,
wow.
scenarios that are not what you would think. Now,
yeah.
granted, not as many as if you go into like a haunted hospital that has a heavy reputation or something. But, but yeah, that's kind of where the joke comes from, you know. It's like I could go into a gas station bathroom and probably get an EVP. You know?
That's a pretty creepy thought, though.
Yeah, there is the theory that if you go to the same place at the same time every day and just record for about 10 minutes within a week or so, you definitely will get an EVP.
Oh, yeah, no question. Yeah, I don't doubt that one bit.
Yeah, I guess inviting it in, inviting the energy, because it's energy all around us, period.
Well, yeah, there should be spirits everywhere when you stop
truly,
and think about it.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't be able to turn around without bumping into them.
So another thing I wanted to ask you about, the Ouija board issue. I think you have a really good handle on that, because I'm dead set against the Ouija board. Some people do know how to open and close the portals, but usually I hear, you know, really scary stories when people talk about using the Ouija board.
Yeah, you know, I think I said this in the book. I mean, the board is wood or cardboard, and the planchette is,
mm-hmm.
is whatever, right? It's plastic or whatever,
yeah.
whatever, however much money you spent on your Ouija setup. It has nothing to do with the tool. It has everything to do with intent. And I commonly hear people say, oh, well, it's the same thing as doing an EVP session or doing anything else we do during an investigation. And I actually disagree with that to some point.
Yeah,
is because I view the Ouija board session or any sort of glass divination session. We've done those relatively recently, but I was pretty uncomfortable with that, too. It's a channeling session, and in
mm-hmm.
my opinion, based on what you're doing there, I believe that you're inviting something to control the object, to manipulate the object through you, and that I am very uncomfortable with. Given all the experiences I've had in the field, so yeah, for me the Ouija thing is kind of a non-starter. I don't bother with it.
Yeah,
I'll stand there and watch somebody else do it, but I don't have any interest in touching the thing.
I kind of fall on the other side of it myself. That it is
sure.
essentially the same as doing an EVP or something. Because with an EVP, you're really doing the same thing. You're asking a spirit to come in and take over the recorder and talk to you. So, I don't know. To me, it's the same thing. But, hey, it's just opinion, you know?
Put it this way. I think everyone can agree that it's within the same realm. I think that the difference is the mechanism by which it works, which we don't fully understand, right, in terms of how an EVP is left.
Exactly.
Or how the planchette would move.
Yeah.
So, it's not something that would be worth arguing about, but... Yeah, it's, you know, it all falls within the same general category, but, you know, it's an important thing for folks that want to get into the field. You should never do anything that you're not comfortable with, regardless, no matter what.
Granted,
that's true.
If it doesn't feel right to you, or you're not into it, or you think it's past your personal line, then don't do it.
Oh, yeah, that's the bottom line. Don't let anybody push you into doing it.
So, since we're talking about some methodology, I did want to ask you about your... the laser microphone system that you use sometimes. Do you have good results with that, Eric?
We have had some incredible results with the laser microphone system. So for those unfamiliar, a laser microphone is old CIA technology. And I believe they're still probably in use today, but I believe the technology was born in probably the, middle, let's say 1950s-ish.
Oh, really?
Would be my guess. Yeah, that's just a guess. Somebody may Google it and figure out that I'm wrong, but I think that it was from that sort of era. And the general idea is that if you bounce a laser beam off of, let's say, a window pane where there's a conversation happening behind it, that you can translate the modulation of the vibration, basically, that the beam can pick up into sound. Totally rudimentary description of it. I'm not qualified to describe it any farther than that, but essentially that's what it is. So we have a couple of laser microphones that we bought from Digital Dowsing. That's Bill Chappell's company. He happens to be a Colorado local here.
Oh.
And so essentially, you have this microphone that is a device that has a almost looks like a camera lens on it, like it's glass. And behind it is a sensor of some sort. And that is the receiver. And then we take a laser pen or some other similar laser device, bounce it off some objects or mirrors, and redirect it into this device. And we plug a speaker into the receiver. And essentially, once it's up and running, you can walk up and break the beam with your hand, and you'll hear the clicks coming through the speaker. If you yell loud enough into that laser beam, you can faintly hear your voice come through the speaker. So they're really cool, and honestly, I think I said in the book, it really doesn't seem like that should work, but we've had multiple occasions where we have just flat-out gotten voices to come through that laser microphone system, which is a closed system, by the way. It's not using radio like a spirit box or anything like that.
Mm.
And the very first time that we got a clear response, we were at the Denver Firefighters Museum. We had it set up in the old locker room upstairs. You know, one of us asked a question. I don't remember what it was, but essentially the question was, you know, which locker was yours or which locker whatever, because the lockers had numbers. And clear as a bell through the laser mic, I believe it said 9 was the number, if I recall.
Right, it is, yeah.
Yeah, it was a man's voice. It was crystal clear. It was loud. We had it on recording. And it was just shocking. Like, oh my God, like, in terms of a direct response, it's like, it doesn't get much better than that. And
jeez,
we were looking for a number, and the thing said a number. Anyway, those are really cool devices. We don't use them that often these days, probably just more out of laziness than anything else.
Yeah, it takes a while to set up, I would imagine.
They're kind of a pain in the butt to set up, especially in old buildings where you don't have good floors.
Yeah.
Getting the laser beam to line up is a hassle, but they're cool. They are really cool.
Well, I've got a couple more questions on that, but we are at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll get back to the laser microphone system and also some of Eric's investigations on the second half of the hour. So please don't go away. We'll be right back.
Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. And you are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Okay, we're back to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. And our guest tonight is Eric Benson, and we're talking all things ghost hunting and EVPs and all kinds of great stuff.
Right, and this is based on his book, Supposedly Haunted.
That's right. So welcome back, Eric.
Welcome back, Eric.
Thanks. So, thanks again.
Our pleasure. The last question I wanted to ask you was, so it picks up voices, but what about something like a growl that you might not hear with your ears? Would it pick that up?
Well, I mean, almost everything that the laser microphone system has ever picked up was something that only came from the system itself, right? Like, we didn't hear it in the room, and it came through the speaker. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Okay.
So, yeah, so everything coming through it has kind of come from some other source, let's put it that way. As you guys know from reading the books, I don't like to just point at things and say that's paranormal. I'm pretty skeptical in general. But, it comes from somewhere else. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, because I was thinking if the CIA was using it, would it pick up, like, say, like a woman was doing dishes and talking, would it pick up the noise of the dishes as well as her voice, or would it just be the voice?
I think it would pick up anything. Mm. You know, sound is ultimately vibration, right?
Yeah.
A microphone is a means to convert vibration into sound, which is pretty much everything, right? Like a record works that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I would expect, now granted, I've never been an international spy, but...
not in your last life, no?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a failed career opportunity. I would venture to say that the device would pick up any sound that was causing vibration within the room. That would be safe to say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, since we're on to EVPs now, a couple more questions. Where do you fall on the... recorder possibly picking up radio waves. What's your opinion on that?
I hear that on occasion, not so much lately, but I've heard some skeptical folks put that forth as a potential way to explain away EVP phenomena. The only thing that I can say for sure is based on our extensive investigations, the fact that we have a private forum that has, I don't even know how many EVPs on it, but it must be in the realm of at least 300, maybe 500. I have never once heard anything on a recording that sounded remotely like a radio station, an announcer voice, a song. Just never. It's never happened, ever. And we've recorded literally, probably I would say, tens of thousands of hours of audio between everybody in the group collectively. It's just never happened.
Yeah.
I don't buy it, right?
Yeah. I don't or didn't.
I'm
not too sure now. I mean, from what I've gathered talking to experts, if you're using like an external microphone with a cable, it is vaguely possible, but just using the internal mic, and there's no way it can happen. But I had a recording, which I did last summer, which I actually just discovered, and it was just with a Zoom H4.1 recorder with the internal microphone, and I cannot figure out how this could possibly not be a radio interference.
Sounds like an ad.
Sure.
I've sent it to a friend who is an expert in EVP and audio, and he's trying to figure it out for me, but so far we don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps there's something in that device that's not well shielded or not. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that it's impossible that it could happen. What I'm saying
I know.
It hasn't happened to you.
We don't have any evidence of it. But what we do have are literally hundreds of direct intelligent responses to questions that come from nothing. Right?
Until I discovered this one, I would have said, no, it's impossible. But now I have to wonder.
Just a puzzle what we've got here.
Yeah, we think actually it's some sort of a government thing. But
we'll see.
We don't want to say too much about it yet. my other question is, EVPs, what exactly do you think they are? I know that's not an easy one, is it?
Because it's such a broad area, and the two of you do investigation, and you know, it's a rabbit hole, right? But what I do know is that we have numerous examples of picking up voices on recorders in an otherwise empty room. We have numerous examples of picking up voices or sound phenomenon or events happening in empty locations that are confirmed having been locked down. Mm-hmm. We have an EVP of a woman singing from the jail down in Canyon City, Colorado. So, and we often get intelligent responses to our questions. You know, we will pose a question to nothing and get a response that is pertinent to the question. I always say I don't know what the paranormal is, and I think I probably belabored that point in the book a few times, but it seems to me that there's obviously something going on that is aware of us that we can't see and can't per- perceive physically in our realm. So whatever that is, prevailing opinion is dead people and grandma coming back from the grave to say hello. And, you know, could it be an alternate dimension thing? But even, you know, I think while that's possible, and some of the recordings that we pick up may be evidence of that, it would have to be a very different dimension than ours if they're just standing around talking to somebody that they can't see, presumably, and answering random questions. You know, I mean, it would be a strange world if that's what that case is. So the evidence seems to point more to the afterlife scenario. It seems to be that there is a energy plane or a spiritual world or whatever you want to call it that is an undercurrent or an overtone, whatever you want to call it, to our own, that we are communicating with. That seems to be the most obvious explanation, as crazy as it might sound. So,
but
the mechanics of the EVP being left in the recorder, that's something we're just not, I don't know. That's, who knows on that.
So you think maybe EMF energy? Electromagnetic?
I think who knows, right? I mean, I would have been quicker to go down that path had we still been using tape recorders, right? Physical tape with reactive materials in the tape to store the recording. But everything's digital now, so it gets a little bit stranger.
Yeah, you're right, really.
Yeah, it's just the mechanism by which the EVPs are left is something that is...
it's almost vibration rather than EMF.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's really strange. The fact that we can't hear it, but the device picks it up.
And
then, of course, there's the other theory that it's not that the device hears it, it's that whatever is sending the message is somehow imprinting it on the device, which gets even stranger, right?
That's right.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, even a digital recorder is bits and bytes, right? It's still data.
Right. It's just exactly.
Physical tape. So,
So
I've often put forward the theory to people that I actually think that whatever it is that we're communicating with on the other side, whether you want to call it dead people or whatever,
they have the answer.
To me it seems to me that our electronic devices would appear to be relatively easy for them to use. However, the mechanism is behind that, because I have seen ridiculous things happen with various electronic devices, recorders, obelisk devices, which generally I'm not a fan of, but I have seen those things literally say people's names and come forward with direct responses.
Wow.
It almost seems like our stuff is child's play. I'm like, oh, I could manipulate that if I wanted to. That's how it feels sometimes.
Yeah. Just like with a ball in Canyon City.
Yeah.
I
know Lynn wants to get on to other stuff, but just quickly along that line, the spirit box. It is radio frequencies. What do you think of that?
Yep.
Is it just a toy? Do you think there's anything to it?
Well, Chris Moon has good luck with it.
Along the same lines? Yeah. Along the same lines, I have heard spirit boxes do absolutely ridiculous things, like answer us in complete sentences and in voices that are clearly riding over the radio. It's not like it's broken up, like it's a piece of a signal off of 10 different radio stations that it scrolls through very quickly. So when we use spirit boxes, that's what we're looking for, because the spirit box is scrolling through the stations at what, you know, every 100 milliseconds, typically on average, is changing stations. And you could change the speed, but we try to make them go as fast as they'll go. And it's typically about 100 milliseconds that it'll hang on a station. So as it's ripping through all those radio stations, if you can get a voice, preferably, I don't like the one-word responses. We try not to ask yes or no questions.
Yeah.
If you can get a couple of words, a couple, two, three words in the same voice, in the same tone, to come out of that box while it's ripping through those radio stations.
That is kind of hard to argue with.
Numerous times. Yeah, I've heard that so many times. So, yes, I believe that there is something to that device. I believe that they are effective.
Okay.
The pitfall with the device is you got to watch it, right, because they're very suggestive. And people like to see what they're looking for, and they like to hear what they're trying to hear. So if you're looking for a yes, and it's flying through those radio stations, it's a one-syllable word, and it's very likely you're going to hear something that sounds like what you're looking for.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Almost thought controlled.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, well, the investigations. I know you want to talk about some of those, Eric. I've got to ask you what if you'd mention it for our audience, because I think I know the answer to this, but what did you find so far to be one of your most frightening experiences, investigations, locations, whatever?
So the thing that has scared me the most during investigations in the field happened at the Washoe Club, and I talk about this in the first book, I believe.
Yes, you do, yeah.
The Washoe Club is in Virginia City, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to explain. The place itself just has a weird, oppressive feeling to it. And you walk in there, and it just doesn't feel right in there. And it's hard to, unless you know what I'm talking about, it's almost impossible to explain it to somebody, right?
Yeah. But, yeah,
it just has a very strange, very kind of heavy feeling to it when you walk in, and it's pretty palpable too when you're in there. And so our team has been around the block a lot, right? Like, we've done a lot of investigations, and we've all had crazy experiences. And it was very interesting to see that the team inside the Washoe Club very quickly decided that we didn't like walking around alone in there, which is pretty surprising, right? I mean, it's not that we generally split up that much anyway, but normally, especially when we're setting up equipment, we'll wander, right? Like, I'll grab a tripod and walk down a hallway in Waverly Hills Sanatorium to set up something, right? Like, I'll do that, and any of the members will do that. And you might be creeped out or whatever, but you'll still do it. But in the Washoe Club, nobody was willing to actually do this. So we very quickly kind of teamed up and said, all right, well, we're going to set out recorders and do our thing, and we'll just make sure that we go as in buddies, you know, like groups of at least two. And anyway, so we did our investigation. We were there for several hours, and we were getting some EVP responses. We like to play them back, you know, on site in real time. And so we were getting stuff like that, and the place just continued to be just creepy feeling overall, but we didn't really have anything big happen other than feeling like you were always being followed mm-hmm. in there, mm-hmm. which is a bit disconcerting. And on the way out of the building, it was very early. It was, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I can't remember now. This is going back to probably close to 4 years now. And so we wrapped up the investigation. We were planning on coming back the next day, and we were all lined up kind of single file near the back door of the Washoe, which goes out onto this deck area. One of the members had stopped, and he was rifling around in his bag and said, oh, hold on, I have to fix my bag. It's like his shoulder strap came loose or something like that had happened. So we're standing there, and it's pitch dark, and it's dead quiet. And all of a sudden, maybe just a couple of feet to my right, this really loud moan just comes out of thin air. And it was, I always tell people it sounded like Lurch from the Addams Family.
Ooh.
Just a really low kind of that tone, and it lasted for what seemed like forever, but it was at least several seconds, and it was a big long moan.
Oh.
And we just froze. Nobody did anything. And I just remember standing there. I think I mentioned in the book, it's like my lip curled uncontrollably. It scared the heck out of me. It was totally unexpected. We were there all night long, and the place was creepy anyway. And this just literally came out of nowhere. I could feel the sound waves from it, which is what maybe freaked me out, because it was very close to us. Mm. And you could feel the vibration from it, and it stopped. And I just remember very slowly turning around with my flashlight. And I think I said in the book, thank God there was nothing standing there, because it would have been like all bets are off, everybody get out of the way, like equipment flying, people getting tossed into walls, and I mean, it would have been a mess, everybody trying to get out of there, but there was nothing there. And, that's the one time on an investigation that I remember being just straight up scared in the location. That really scared the heck out of me when that happened.
I can see it would. That would get your attention.
Eric, the feeling...
It was cool.
The feeling of that place, is it... Do you get the feeling that someone was hurt, abused, maybe even killed or tortured? Is that the heaviness that you feel?
You know, I'm not quite that sensitive to that level, so I have a difficult time putting a fine point on it like that. But
okay.
there's something about that place that, has this overwhelming sense of, it's like an oppressive feeling.
Okay, dark energy?
And it's just like you're not alone in there. You know, it's a very weird feeling. It's very palpable when you're in the place. And
do you get the feeling you're not wanted there?
You know, I never got that impression. It's almost like just, I always hate to assign intent to anything, right? But the natural inclination is to associate that type of feeling with an unwelcoming thing, right? Like it either doesn't want you there or it wishes to do some kind of harm to you or that sort of thing. And it's just not a good feeling. And I think I said in the book, I would have a very difficult time staying in that place alone for a night.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I actually could do it. which is saying a lot, because I've been to a lot of places, right? I've had a lot of experiences, and I would say the vast majority of places that we've been, I could actually do that. I'm not saying that I would want to do it, but I think I could do it. But the Washoe Club, if I even consider flying out there and renting the place and sitting in there alone at night, I just get, it's a terrifying thought to me, well, that place in particular.
You know, people have died of fright, so that's always a possibility.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's just, I couldn't do it with that particular place of all the places that we've been to. There's only maybe one other place that I would have a very hard time doing that with, and that is Malvern Manor in Malvern, Iowa.
Oh.
I get the same type of sense with that place, where if I think about doing that, it's like, oh, no. Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
Whoa. What took place there?
That place has a very similar unfriendliness to it. It has a very similar feel to the Washoe Club. It's different, but it is along the same lines, where whatever's in there doesn't seem to be particularly friendly, at least some of what's in there. And it's not really afraid to make itself known. And the thought of being in there by yourself is, at least for me, is not, it wouldn't be high on my list. I would do Malvern before the Washoe. The Washoe is like definitely a no-go. The Malvern is like 95%. I wouldn't do it.
Well, then, what about Waverly
Hills?
Yeah,
pretty interesting.
Comparatively speaking, Waverly Hills, could you stay there?
Yeah, I mean, compared to the other two, absolutely. I could investigate that alone if I had to. There's a difference between wanting to and... or putting yourself in the situation. So Waverly Hills is of all the places we've ever been, that place, it's in Louisville, Kentucky, for those listening. It's an old tuberculosis hospital. And it's a massive building. It's this hulking structure. It's multiple floors, and it's absolutely huge. That place is probably the most overtly haunted place that I've ever been. And I say that because when we went there the first time, there was only three of us, and we're actually going to be doing that again in a couple of months.
No kidding.
The same three are going back to Waverly for just the three of us. So the place is huge. It has a very heavy reputation for being haunted, and it absolutely delivered the night that we were there. It was to the point where I didn't previously think that a place could actually be that haunted. Even though we had done so many investigations, we'd had a lot of experiences. Most of the time when you do an investigation and have an experience, it's usually, and you guys would know this, if you're lucky enough to have a big experience, right? Like you see something, you see a shadow, or you see a ball of light, or you hear a disembodied voice, usually you'll have one big experience, maybe two if you're really lucky.
Right.
But usually nothing. So this place, we get into Waverly Hills, and it was just completely alive. We were seeing shadow figures dart back and forth in the hallway. I saw something poking its head out from a door frame. I think I said that in the book.
Right,
you
know, yeah.
Feet down from us. We heard these terrifying screams, like a woman screaming coming from like the operating room area just three times, just absolutely ridiculous, like a Halloween haunted house scream.
Did it sound human? I mean, it didn't sound like a memory.
Oh, yeah. It sounded like a woman, like having a surgical procedure without anesthesia.
Oh, it was like that kind of,
like, just ridiculous screams.
Yeah.
We had disembodied voices kicking off all the time, like just right around us, in between us, and within a few feet of us. We heard footsteps walking around. It was just, Stephen, our founder, saw something, some black weird thing crawl across the ceiling.
Oh, that's right. I've read about that in other accounts. Very creepy.
Yeah, it was just ridiculous. The Waverly was ridiculous the night that we were there.
Well, so many people died there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think even more so than the history of Waverly, that place is investigated so often and so heavily by so many people that I would challenge it not to be haunted at this point, right?
Yeah.
Investigators in there calling out and pulling things in and maybe bringing stuff with them. And I suspect that these days Waverly is a big melting pot of paranormal. That's probably why it's as haunted as it is.
I think you're right.
So you answered one question for me. They are still open for investigations then. Weren't they?
Yeah, they are. So
weren't they remodeling and trying to make a resort or something out of it?
They were thinking about it, weren't they?
Yeah, I've heard rumors that they were hoping to turn it into a hotel, like a convention center.
Yeah.
I've not seen any evidence that that's going to happen anytime soon.
Oh, okay.
I would be surprised if it did, to be honest. But, yeah, their tour season runs, I believe it's March to August. I might be a month off on that. And essentially on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve at midnight, Eastern time, the booking site comes online. They use Eventbrite. And you can pick your date. It's $1,000 to investigate it for the night. You got to pay it up front. And the dates sell out within the first month, easily for the entire year.
Yeah.
So this past New Year's Eve, I was sitting there watching TV, hitting refresh on my web browser every few minutes until that site lit up, because we had one specific date that we were trying to get, and I wanted to make sure that I got it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But,
well, that's good. That's good to know, because
I
haven't been there yet, and I'd like to go.
I would highly recommend it. It's kind of the pinnacle of the places, in my opinion, in the U.S. that you could go that are well-known places.
Yeah. Lynn's looking at me. She's giving me that look. I don't think she would go anywhere near the place.
I don't think so. No, that and jails. Leave me out of
prisons.
It.
Prisons.
No, thank you.
I don't know. I like the dark places. When we go investigate, I have a habit of disappearing by myself into the darkest place in the building.
What
can I say, you know?
I'll give it to him. He is brave.
Or stupid. I don't know. One or the other.
Right.
You got about 3 minutes left.
Well, really quickly, Eric, I wanted to ask you, I lived in Denver for 7.5 years, and I found that once I moved there, I started having all kinds of experiences and heightened awareness. Do you think the altitude plays a part in that?
I mean, I've never even considered that.
No?
I'd be surprised.
Because the air is clear.
My reaction to it is like, no, I don't think so, but I couldn't say for sure, I suppose. I think we've seen members of our team, including myself, get more and more sensitive over time, but I've always assumed that it was from the sheer number of investigations that we've done. We go out so often and do this, fairly frequently. That we've just sort of developed a sense for it. That's what I've always assumed.
Yeah, that could be. Maybe it was just me and my opening up, but I had a lot of experiences in Denver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just coincidence. Sure. Maybe it happened at that time, huh?
It could be, yeah.
Who knows, right? It could be anyone.
Okay, so how about, what would you like to discuss as far as your other investigations, the Canyon City Women's Prison or the fire station in Denver? Anything in particular you want to bring up?
In about 2 minutes.
In 2 minutes?
Well, that's a very wide open-ended question. Mm. As you guys can tell, I could go on for hours.
Oh, yeah, I would love you to.
Oh, well, we'll have to have you come back again.
Yeah, just let me know. We the group has been fortunate. We've been able to travel all over the country, and we do that a couple of times a year, and we try to hit the places that are notoriously haunted places. And it's been a really good run for us, right? You know, and we don't go out as often as we used to. We don't necessarily investigate locally very often anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We pretty much keep it to a couple of trips a year. And when we do it, we really do it up, right?
So yeah.
In a couple of months, we're going to be going out to the Midwest, and we'll be investigating Ashmore Estates and Waverly Hill Sanatorium. We're going to check out the Randolph County Infirmary in Indiana.
Okay.
And the Post Town School in Ohio. So we're doing four locations. And to be honest, most of the time we go out, we consider it checking items off of our bucket list.
Sure.
Our normal bucket list. Yeah. Because there are so many places to see, and it's difficult, and it's expensive to do the trips.
Oh, it is.
So
you going to take like a month off to do that?
No, we're just going for a week. We're going to drive out
a week?
One night at each place. And
wow.
Turn around and come back.
Wow. Well,
yeah, that's what the jobs allow, right? I mean,
yeah.
Right.
Would you like to mention your...
in the way of having fun.
Would you like to mention your website, Eric, and where they can get your book?
Yeah, sure. So the books are called Supposedly Haunted and of Ghostly Origins. You can find them on most online retailers. Amazon would be the easiest place. The quickest way to find the website is www.supposedlyhaunted.com. And yeah, there's links to books. There's a couple of podcast links on the website if you care to hear me drone on even more than I have here. Yeah, currently working on a book with an author buddy of mine named Richard Estep, who you guys know.
Yes, yes, Richard and Steve Wheaton.
Yeah.
Yeah, terrific.
Yeah, we're doing a joint book on the Farrar Elementary School in Iowa.
Oh, good.
Cool.
Within the next couple of months, and I'm taking the co-author seat on that. And, it's a lot of fun.
Well, Richard, that is fun. Guy. Yeah, so, good luck with that.
Cool.
Great.
Maybe we can get you both on when that one comes out.
I'm sure you could.
Yeah.
And perhaps the other book, too, that you... Yeah, your second one is complete. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah, they're
good.
Both available. Yeah.
Okay, well, we're out of time. Eric, thank you so much for coming on. We enjoyed it.
Thank you, Eric. It was great. We'll have to have you come back.
Thank you.
And say hi to Richard and Stephen for us.
All right, will do.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thanks.
Good night, Eric.
Have a good night.
Okay.
You have been listening to Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience, with your hosts Willie Hassel and Lynn Nickerson on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.